Well, summer is waning and fall just around the corner, which means it's the insect world is in full gear, preparing for their winter, so we thought it a good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and tonight we invite you to call in with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, thanks again for joining us once more for What's Bugging You.
It's my pleasure to be here, Bill.
All right. So let's start. We have, as always, we get some photos sent in. People want things identified. And we're going to start with one that was submitted from Shanna Smith. Actually, two photos, and they are on our website under the What's Bugging You post up on our website right now. And she goes ahead and says, my name is Shanna Smith, and I live in Shreveport. And I went outside at approximately 10 a.m., and I saw these worms in my backyard. They are pretty much covered in sizable portions of my backyard that is closest to my home. I'm not sure what they are, but my friend stated that it could be a type of caterpillar. And I have attached the pictures below and ask you to identify them. So we've got some interesting little critters there. They're not actually technically bugs, are they?
Well, they are insects.
Okay.
I when I got into my office that Monday morning, I also had two phone calls concerning the same incidents. Right now, at least in the Shreveport area, we have a larger than average population of caterpillars that go by the name of army worms. And the reason they're called army worms is because they do tend to move in large groups, just like an army marching down the road. And they're attracted to grasses a lot, but what they're doing is that they are getting ready to overwinter. And they're looking for suitable soil that they can dig a hole in, and then they can crawl in there, and they go from a caterpillar stage to a pupal stage, and they'll overwinter there, and then in the next spring, they will emerge as adult moths.
Okay.
And so that's what they turn into, adult moths. It's a pretty drab brown moth, nothing really to speak of, but when you see that number of caterpillars on the ground moving, it can be rather frightful. It's certainly concerning, but they're completely harmless. And they're not even eating right now, so they're not going to destroy your yard.
Reminds me of a 1950 B movie, you know, the attack of the army worms or something like that.
There was a lot of those 1950 B movies made about giant insects at the time. They just tended to gravitate toward that topic.
Yeah, I kind of like those old movies, too. They're kind of fun. You know, plus it's fun to watch the crews try to work the giant insects. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we have phone lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We do have one call online, so we're going to get to that right away. Leon from Bossier City. Leon, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Good evening. It's a great show. Thank you all for doing it. My question has to do with gnats. Are gnats a juvenile fly?
No, Leon, they're not. With flies and beetles and wasps, bees, ants, and butterflies, they all have immatures that do not look anything like the adult. Gnats, the immatures of maggots, are actually very, very small maggots. And so if you see something with wings, it's always going to be an adult form. Now, the problem that a lot of people have at this time of the year with gnats coming into their house is because they're looking for moist areas, and a lot of people overwinter their plants. If you're having a gnat problem, there's going to be some kind of a moist organic source like soil or some other type. I even had a guy who had a gnat problem, and he looked all around his house, and then he realized he had one of those bamboo plants that just sat in water, and he looked in there, and that was the source of their gnats. Where are you experiencing these gnats at, Leon?
Just an overall question.
Okay.
Intellectual curiosity, if you will, if that doesn't sound too stuffy.
No. Yeah, so the immatures of beetles are referred to as grubs. The immature of flies are referred to as maggots. For wasps, bees, and ants, they're kind of grub-like too, but nobody ever really seems to care about them because they're more focused on the adult form. And then, of course, the immature forms of moths and butterflies are caterpillars. And there are many other different types of insects. For example, everybody knows what a stink bug is. An immature of a stink bug looks just like an adult stink bug, but without fully developed wings.
Yeah, there's a lot of stink bugs around lately.
Well, it's just that time of the year. We're getting outside more, and we're noticing more things going on. And as Bill stated at the beginning of the show, now is the time that they are starting to prepare to overwinter. For example, I'm not surprised that if in the next month I should be getting some calls about lady beetles invading people's houses, because they'll do that when they get ready to overwinter as adults. And that's another kind of interesting entomological thing, is that sometimes insects overwinter as adults, and sometimes they overwinter as larvae, or they can overwinter as eggs, or they can overwinter as grubs. And so there's a lot of diversity out there.
Well, thank you for your intelligent and the delivery is so down where I can understand it.
Well, that's the only way I can understand it too, Leon. You know, thank you for your call.
Okay, thanks, y'all. Good night.
You bet.
Good night.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any call regarding or question regarding our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, are welcome. And yes, there are friendly insects out there all over the place. As a matter of fact, we're going to go to a photograph also on our website right now. And ironically, this is sent by another woman named Shanna Smith, who happens to be a friend of mine back from Florida. And she sent this in to me. She's a big photo bug, and she loves nature. So she's always going out and getting different pictures of nature. And this is a beautiful photograph of a very big spider. I've seen one of these spiders literally about 2 inches from my nose once, walking in the woods, doing the same thing, photography. And I turned around, and there it was staring at me. Needless to say, I jumped back. And so tell us about this spider.
One of the most beautiful and large spiders that we have here in the listening area of Red River Radio are called agope spiders. And they tend to be very brightly colored oranges and blacks and yellows. And they spin these rather large webs, sometimes anywhere they can be 3.5 feet in diameter. And they have a characteristic way of marking their webs. They'll have a very thick, white, zigzag silk image in there. And they will put those up in the dusk of the day, and they'll take them down a lot of times in the morning, depending on the traffic of the area. And they are beneficial. They eat other insects that fly into their nets and their webs, I should say. And they're just gorgeous. It scares a lot of people. And sometimes they're also referred to as garden spiders because they'll build their nest in gardens, because they know that garden plants attract other insects.
And the one thing about spiders is that, generally speaking, they get rid of pests that we don't want around. So that's
a lot of times that's true, yeah.
Yeah, not always, but most of the time. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have a full bank of phones right now. So David, Patty, and Stephen, please stay on the line. We're going to go next to Ron from Coushatta. Ron, you're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Hello, this is Rob, and I was going to I called y'all last time, but really enjoyed the conversation and looked at those ants. But this is I got one question and I got one comment.
All right.
Talk about those army worms.
Yep.
There's a yard for an elderly gentleman that I mow. It's about 3 acres. They stripped 3 acres of Bermuda and Bahia grass to the ground. It looks like there's no grass. I mean, I have never seen anything like it. It must be millions of caterpillars. I mean, they stripped it there. I mean, just like it had never been watered, but there was the yard next to it was green for St. Augustine. They didn't like that grass too much, but the Bahia and the Bermuda grass, they ate it to the ground. This is like it was grazed by a herd of cows and nothing. Yep. It was an awesome sight.
You're absolutely right, Rob. When I was talking about them moving, that's after they eat and they get ready to pupate. But while they're still eating, they eat like an army. They can really devastate an area. And they do have certain food preferences. And St. Augustine is not one of them. But the Bermuda grass, they really do like. You're absolutely right there.
And they didn't eat a single broadleaf weed in the yard. So all the broadleaf weeds and all the flowers and the flowers. In fact, they got up into the flower bed and ate all the crabgrass among the daylilies, and we did the flower bed clean. You can see all the daylilies now.
Well, that's a good thing, but a bad thing about the turf, you know.
I think it'll recover because Bahia grass is tough and Bermuda grass is tough, but it stripped it bare than any. I mean, it was just like this. I was stunned. The week before I'd mowed the grass, it was 2 inches tall and green. Drive back over there, and we're getting plenty of rain. Drive back over there.
And you're right, it might recover. The thing about a lot of people don't understand about grasses, especially the kind that we use in our yards, is that the growing part is actually very close to the ground. That's why you can cut it and it still keeps growing. You can cut it, it still keeps growing. Whereas a lot of other plants, the growing part is at the very top of the plant. And so if you cut that, then the plant stops growing. And so, very good point. What was your comment, Rob?
My other question was, how do you deter Asiatic ladybugs? They have filled my house full. I was vacuuming them up with a little hand vacuum and take them and dump them back outside all last winter, and they seem to come back in as fast as I could dump them.
Yeah, they'll do that in the winter because that's where they like to overwinter. And vacuuming is a good thing, but don't just dump them out the back door because they'll just come right back in again. You need to relocate them far away from the house, but there's probably will still be more coming just the other way. You might try a pyrethrin type of insecticide, but more than anything else, especially with the Asiatic, you got to find out their entry point. And you need to either caulk the openings of the house or use the spray foam that hardens. If you find their entry point, then you can control them coming in.
That is a multicolor. Everybody would think each one looks different. They'd think each one was a different type of ladybug. But they're beautiful, but they can be sure pesky. And they bite, too.
But the thing is that they're pests, but and they're a nuisance, but they're not going to harm, you know, things. The biggest harm they can do is when they get on walls and they have this yellow secretion that can discolor the paint or the wallpaper, and that's the most destructive thing that they do. And so good luck with that. You got to find where they're coming in at, man, and block them.
Thank you much, and I'll be listening to the rest of your show, and I'll come back on, and I'll give you all another holler.
All right. Thank you, Rob.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we did lose one of our callers. Patty, if you get a chance, please call back. We're going to go next to David from Minden. David, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, good evening, Dr. Burton.
Good evening, David.
My question relates back to your first caller. I have an infestation of gnats as well, and two issues. I can't determine where they're coming from, and I'd like to know how to get rid of them because I don't have any water in the house. All my plants are outside. Everything inside is artificial, but I cannot find out where they're coming from whatsoever.
Well, the first place I would look, do you have a garbage disposal?
Yes.
You might want to run some vinegar down through the garbage disposal. There might be some kind of a food particle stuck down in there that they might be feeding on. Plus, that's a nice water source. The thing about gnats is they have to have some kind of organic food, and it has to be very moist. And so if it's not a potted plant, then there's something else that they're attracted to in the house to where they're laying their eggs. Now, it's totally possible that they're coming in from the outside, but if you have enough of an infestation that they're a nuisance for you, they're probably coming from somewhere inside the house.
How do I get rid of them? The live ones, the ones that are flying around bothering me.
Well, there's always the standard fly swatter. You know, you can knock them down off of the air.
I'd be knocking them down all day.
Yeah. You might try to get some fly tape. That might take care of some of them. Do you know what I mean by fly tape?
Yes. Is there any chemical that will kill them?
Only if you can find the source of them. You know, there are some chemicals that you can spray in the air, and you can spray at them, and it will knock them down. and you have to make sure that it's very a fine aerosol, and so you don't want anything that squirts out of a bottle. It's going to have to be a fine aerosol spray. And if you read the active ingredient, every insecticide has to have an active ingredient listed on the label. And if it has a suffix of THRIN, that means it's a type of a pyrethrin, that is what we call a knockdown insecticide. It will knock them down because it mimics instant paralysis.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, David.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we have phone lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Patty from Orr City, we have lines open now if you want to call back. Right now we're going to Stephen from Arlington, Texas. Stephen, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I am from Arlington, just happened to be passing through the area listening to your wonderful program here. We have a house in Arlington, and it's right next to a big pasture. It's pretty much in the suburbs, but we have this really large, like 50-acre pasture right behind the house. And we have a reoccurring problem with wasps. Like every single year, I probably knocked down about 20 or so wasp nests, and the first time I discovered them, they actually came in through the chimney when my wife was at home by herself with the kids, and I paid a guy, it was $500 they charged me to come and remove these nests from the top of the house and the chimney. And over the years, I've gotten pretty good at knocking them down myself with a paint pole and a ladder, and I even go next door. There's a retired single lady next to me, and I'll go over there and take care of all hers as well. But I'm just curious, is there any good practices to prevent wasps? I believe they're yellow jackets. Or is there any, do you have any good ideas to keep them from, coming back and building the nest? And they seem to, usually be in the same areas, around the soffit underneath the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about wasps is that they are predators. And so I suspect that big open field behind you is harboring a lot of caterpillars and some other soft-bodied insects that they're using as a food source. So they're wanting to build their houses right next to their grocery store, and the closest structure is going to be your house. So I have two suggestions for you. One, keep doing what you're doing, vigilant. Walk around the house every week. If you see a small nest starting, and even up under the shingles. I've got a wasp nest in my house right now that's right up underneath the shingles, and I'm trying to figure out how to get to it. And the other thing is go out in the very early morning or the late evening, because during the day, most of the population of those wasps are out. So if you need to spray them with something, like the insecticide that shoots 27 feet, go out there early morning or late evening, and there'll be more on the nest. Or like you said, you can knock the nest down during the day, and they probably won't return. The other thing you can try doing is the wasp that you're describing, they're in the family Vespidae, and all Vespid wasps are attracted to the color yellow. And so I would go to the dollar store, and I would get me a bunch of flat-type bowls or saucers, and I would put water in there, and they would be attracted to that. When they come back in, or soapy water would be best, and they'll drown. And so that could be a pre-measure that you can take to control the population. But, you're living right next to their grocery store, and so it's going to be very hard for you to control them or completely eradicate them.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But no, thank you. I mean, I think that's a good idea. Maybe I can get a yellow bucket or something and put it up against the fence with soapy water.
Yeah.
And that might be a good measure to take. But yeah, I've gotten pretty good at it. I'm thinking about starting my own wasp removal business. Anyway.
Well, I'm familiar with the terrain in that part of the Texas, because I grew up in the Wichita Falls area. And yeah, it's a lot of open ground, a lot of open grounds, low vegetation for sure. Good luck with that.
Well, thank you so much. Y'all have a good day.
You too, Stephen. Safe travels.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have all lines open right now, so you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. any question regarding our insect world, the fiendish or the friendly kind, are you know, free, and you can call in 800-552-8502. And we do have one final photograph up on our website, and this also sent to me by a friend of mine in Gainesville, Florida, Shanna Smith. And now, typically, I would call this a butterfly, but you say it's a moth, right?
It is a moth. A lot of people are very surprised to find out that there are some gorgeous moths.
Yes.
One of the prettiest moths that we have in this area is the lunar moth. Nice pale green, beautifully shaped wings. We also have some Saturnian moths that they have eye spots on them. But what this picture is of is a moth that's in the Artiidae family. And they don't, sometimes they're called tiger moths because they'll have spots on them, or they'll have yellow stripes and yellow markings on them. But this is a beautiful wasp. It's about probably 3/4 inch in length. It's covered, its head is covered in, it looks like a cotton ball. And then the wings are folded nicely right over its back, and it's lined with beautiful dark circles. And it's resting there on a piece
blade of grass.
Yeah. And moths are basically nocturnal, so they'll just hang out during the day, and then when it gets to be nighttime, they'll take off. Where we see more butterflies during the day, and that's one of the big differences between moths and butterflies, diurnal versus nocturnal. But there's also some parts of their antenna that can be very different, okay, whether they're knobbed or not.
Now, are moths, pollinators at all?
They can be, yes. They can be, and someone showed me a picture today in my microbiology lab of a hawk moth, and they're very nice, big, robust moth. They have a tapered abdomen, and they're some of the fastest flyers in the insect world.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we do have some phone calls awaiting, so we're going to go next to Gordon from Alexandria. Gordon, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, thank you for taking the call. My question is, how do you get rid of carpenter ants?
Okay, well, carpenter ants, I'm surprised you asked about them because they're not that common here in the South. But, again, you have to find where they're getting into the house. Now, carpenter ants aren't eating the wood like termites are. They're just excavating the wood for a place to live. So you need to be able to find their colony. Unfortunately, most carpenter ant problems are going to have to go to a licensed pesticide person because of the chemicals and the foggers that they used. Regular foggers that you can buy off the shelf are not going to be strong enough to penetrate the area where they're living in the wood. But I would also make sure that you get somebody to identify whether they're carpenter ants or whether they're army ants or some other type of ant. And I can do that. You just send me a specimen, Beverly Burden at LSU Shreveport. And the zip here is 71115. And send it to me with the contact, and I'll be glad to look at it for you.
Hey, that sounds great. Now, I've talked to some professionals about it. And I've used insecticide and the stuff you mix up with water and everything around the brick where it separates from the concrete, saturated all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that really didn't help too much. And they basically just stay in the kitchen area.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be somewhere around there. But I will look you up and I will try to. I've got some samples at home that I was going to take to an entomologist. And we'll just go from there, and I'll try to send you a package full of them.
And another resource for you might be the Forest Insect Lab located in Pineville. I can't think of the gentleman's name right now, but maybe it'll come to me later. But there is a forest entomology research lab located there in Pineville that you might be able to take some specimens to as well.
All right, well, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good day, and shalom.
All right. Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Charlene on hold. Please stay with us, Charlene. John from Center, Texas is next. John, what's your question tonight?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and I really enjoy listening to your program.
Thank you.
My first question, or my only question is, we have a problem, real bad problem with dirt daubers. And, of course, as you're aware, they get into everything. They get into our machinery. They get into our tools. They get into any orifice that's open with any kind of mechanical nature to it. And, you know, it just wreaks havoc on everything. And I was wondering if you could have any suggestions about how to control or eliminate dirt daubers.
Well, the problem with dirt daubers is that they don't live in colonies. They're solitary wasps, and they're hunting for spiders because that's what they put inside of their, what we would call it, their dirt houses, their dirt tubes. And the way they make those dirt things is, I'm sure you know, John, it's almost as hard as cement. And so, again, they may also be attracted to the yellow soap containers. They're in a little bit of a different family, but let's try that and see how that goes for you. And just be, you know, the thing is, if you could get rid of all the spiders, you'd get rid of all the dirt daubers, but that's not feasible either.
Right.
There must be something about your special location that's drawing that many dirt daubers, because normally in the area, they're not that populated, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So are they... do you think, are they getting into the barn?
Yes, for sure. They get into the barn, especially the barns where the tractors are.
Yeah.
And like any kind of agricultural machinery, they just, they come in and they stop up filters and so forth.
Yeah. Diligent inspection is, and then try the yellow bucket thing. I don't know if that'll work with dirt daubers or not. But because I've never actually gotten a call that dirt daubers were a pest for somebody, other than the fact that people don't like them building their dirt houses on the side of their nice brick homes. And so that's a good question.
They get inside of anything like filters,
right,
on tractors, and
well, like you said, anything that has an orifice that they can crawl into, because of course that's going to be a nice place for them to build their house because it's going to be a protective area, but that's not too good for the equipment as well. And so,
right,
you know, unless you want to try, you know, taking a big tarp and covering up some of your machinery, but that's probably not very feasible either.
We've put screens on. We've tried putting, you know, and that's effective too. It's just kind of a real pain.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, put screens, a real fine mesh or screens to
right,
cover up stuff that's mechanical. But they get into pumps. I'm not sure really what's. I guess it's the spiders that attracts them.
It is.
Okay.
It is. Good luck with that, John. That's a tough one.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. David from Longview, please stay online for a few minutes, and Charlene from Nacogdoches, you're next. Charlene, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, you have already answered this question because I just got to start listening to you. But do you have any hope for ridding a house full of carpenter bees? They come back every year.
The biggest thing about carpenter bees is that they're normally attracted to wood that has not been treated. And so if you have like a patio that you can varnish or paint, then that might be helpful to you. The other thing about carpenter bees is that they're not very aggressive. I tell you what, I keep on my patio to take care of carpenter bees, and they're not very fast either, is I have an old, not a racquetball racket, but a small racket with that you pop the little white birdie back and forth. What's that called?
Oh,
badminton.
Yeah, badminton racket. And the holes are small enough that I can just bang them down to the ground, and then I stomp on them. And that may not sound, you know, very, pleasant, but that's what I do. Also, I also have some dowel sticks that when they start to drill into the wood, I would take a dowel stick, and dowel sticks are soft enough. You can take the thing that you prune bushes with, and you can cut it off, and you can just start plugging those holes, and that will be a deterrent for them coming back all the time as well.
Well, I sure appreciate. I think I need to get the eaves painted again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your help.
Good luck with that, darling. Charlie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and we do have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have PJ from Shreveport on hold. We have somebody else, no name, on hold. And we have David from Longview next. David, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, doctor.
Hi.
I need some advice. My daughter has some land right outside of Longview, and she's lost maybe half a dozen pine trees in the last 2 years from, I believe, they're beetles, some type of beetle. And you can hear them when they infest the tree. Basically, you almost hear them chewing it up. And, of course, it kills the tree, and it has to be cut down. I'm wondering what could be done to prevent further damage to other trees.
Yeah, what you're describing is the southern pine beetle, and they're extremely small beetles, and it takes a bunch to take down a pine tree. And what's interesting about their biology is that oftentimes they will pick on trees that are very healthy, and then once a few get established, they will release a aggregation pheromone that basically calls all the other beetles up, like, okay, guys, we've got this tree, you know, go ahead and we've got it we've got it infested, but you know, the buffet's open, come and eat, and they'll inundate the tree. The best thing you can do is monitor the trees, and when you see a tree that might be damaged by the southern pine beetle, go ahead and cut it and get it out. It's like a sanitation method. There are some pesticides and some insecticides that you can spray, but what I would do is I would contact your local extension agency and ask for and talk to a forester. They'll know who to send out to inspect your trees and who can give you better advice than I can over the phone. But once you get an infestation of southern pine beetle, it depends on, if you're talking about acres and acres and acres and acres, you can quarantine them and cut everything out and haul it away. But if it's a small localized situation, then it's going to be pretty tough to control.
Yeah, they've lost some beautiful trees.
Oh. And
it's just such a shame. We'll go ahead with the forester because they have quite a bit of acreage, and I don't see any at the moment that appears to be, but that's come and gone. And like I said, over a couple of years, they've lost at least a half a dozen, and it's terrible for the landscape, but also just simply the cost to have them cut down. So
that's
anyway,
right.
Thanks for your time, and we'll do that.
Yeah, you need to contact your local extension agency and ask to talk to a forester for sure. Good luck with that, David. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And I don't have a name for this caller, but you're on with Dr. Burton. What's your name and what's your question tonight?
My name is Jeffrey.
Hi, Jeffrey.
I'm looking for a cure for moles in my front yard.
The best thing you can do for moles is to trap them out. The thing about moles is they'll run under, they'll have those tunnels that they have, and there are special mole traps that you can go to, say, a tractor supply store and get. There might be some poisons that are out there. I've always just preferred to trap them because that way I know I've got them. I've got a dead body right there and I know it's gone. But if you go with poisons, that might also eliminate them. I've just never used the poisons before. But if you talk to your tractor supply people. They would probably know better than I do about poisons. But I'm a trapping girl. I like to trap them because I like to see the dead. And that sounds terrible, but that's the way it is.
Right. Would the poison affect my animals, do you know?
Well, moles are mammals. And so it might affect other mammals, definitely.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate your call.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we've got another caller. I don't have a name, but we're going to go to it right now. Please state your name and tell us what your question is. Hello, can you hear me?
Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. My name is David from Nacogdoches.
Yeah, please turn your radio down in the background. It's going to interfere with us.
Okay. Now, the fellow that was having a problem with his tractors and stuff and wasps and mud dabbers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I used to have a huge problem with wasps. And I tried chemical sprays and everything, and I sprayed the wasp. And basically what happens when you spray the a nest of wasps with chemical sprays is they fly around, and it takes about 20 minutes for them to all die, and it's a big mess. So what what I did was get a 5-gallon bucket and put a gallon of water in it and some dishwashing liquid and some laundry detergent in it, and, you know, a handful of both. And and then you mix it up, and then you just throw it onto their nests and stuff. And if they're exposed, it kills them in, 1 second. But if they're, inside under a roof or something, you might have to use a chemical spray or something like that. But my advice for this fellow with the tractors and stuff is to, get a solution of laundry detergent and dishwashing liquid and just put it all over any area where they might alight, And I think that would deter them because chemically, wasps are very sensitive. If they can die in 1 second from the exposure from laundry detergent and dishwashing liquid, then I think they would avoid the area where this, if there's a coating on his machinery of this substance, I think they would avoid it,
Well, David, you're correct in the fact that there's been use of soaps as insecticides. In fact, we call them insecticidal soaps for a very long, long time. Now, and if you're going to put it directly on the nest, that's one thing. If it's going to act as a deterrent, it will only act as a deterrent while it's still wet. But again, you don't want to be throwing a lot of soap into, electrical machinery either. And so it may work fine for nests, but I don't think it's going to deter them getting into the machinery that much. And but we're always looking for a solution. And that's what we're talking about, setting out the yellow buckets of, soapy water, that might attract them and kill them as well. Now, as far as the instant knockdown, a lot of people will take and spray them with hairspray, too, because that glues up their wings and they fall down in the air. That's always been kind of an interesting thing I always forget about doing. But very good advice and very good, interesting suggestions. Thank you for your call, David.
Okay, thank you.
All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You, and we're going to go to our last caller right now. But we still have lines open and time in the show, so you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. This is the last caller we have in the holding pen right now, that is, and that is PJ. And from Shreveport, PJ, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Hey. So I've got these little spiders. I don't know what kind of spiders they are, but they're really tiny black spiders with two yellow stripes on them.
They're all in my car, and I'm freaking out to drive my car. I'd like to know what kind of spiders they are, if you can identify them from that, and, like, is there anything I can use in my car, like essential oils or something, to get rid of them or keep them away?
How tiny are we talking? Do they look delicate, or do they look like they might be small but robust?
Small and bust. They're not the little tiny delicate ones. They're black and they have those yellow stripes on them. It's like two yellow stripes.
I'm not sure, but it sounds to me that you may be talking about some different type of spiders that we call jumping spiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're jumping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're absolutely harmless, although I understand that you don't want them infesting your car either, PJ. They're in there hunting, or they're in there trying to seek some shelter. I would just go vacuum your car out really well, at least once a week or every 3 or 4 days. And I think maybe if you do put some essential oils, maybe something like eucalyptus oil or orange citrus oil, that might be a deterrent to what they're hunting in there. So that might be a deterrent to any little small insect that they may be interested in getting. But they happen to be one of my favorite groups of spiders because I think they're cute. But I understand you don't want them in your car. But be assured that they're not aggressive and they're not harmful in any way. And vacuuming and the use of some heavy oils might do the trick, PJ. Good luck with that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's good to know they're harmless, too.
Yeah.
Drove off I-20.
If you train them right, they might be a good co-pilot. You never know.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for your call, PJ.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502, 800-552-8502. And that's the kind of spider I tried to send you a picture in my office, but he won't pose properly. I guess he's camera shy, but he's my pet in my office.
Yeah, they're great.
Every now and then I see him walking up the wall or going on the lamp or something.
They mind their own business.
Yeah, pretty much. He doesn't bother me, so I let him go. And we're going to go next to Jean from Hot Springs, who's traveling through the area. Jean, what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, this is a great show. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Thanks. So, excuse me. I'm sorry. So the guy with the gnats, I just have one tiny suggestion, and then I have a question about gnats.
Okay.
In the past, when I had a really bad infestation, I think it was coming from my garbage disposal. I used like the attachment on my vacuum cleaner to suck them up, and it like worked pretty well to get the vast majority of them. And then you have to clear out like the source, but you can just take a like the end of your vacuum cleaner hose.
Right.
And suck them out of the air. It's a lot easier than trying to swat them because they're really, really fast.
Okay. Well, that is something that I would have never thought of. And so at first I thought you were describing, using the vacuum attachment to clear up the garbage disposal. But you're talking about sucking them right out of the air.
Yeah. It's way easier. If you have a bunch of them, and it doesn't take much to get a whole bunch. You can just take the end and suck them up in your vacuum cleaner, and then, of course, get rid of, the bag or whatever.
Right, right.
But then my question was, and sometimes my husband swears by, I think it's apple cider vinegar. You just put out a saucer, and they'll drown in it.
You're absolutely right. Right now, I have some little flies invading my laundry room because that's where I keep my cat food at, and she's 18 years old. And so she only likes moist cat food and is attracting those little gnats. So what I did is I took a little glass jar and poked a hole in the lid of it, and I had some old red wine that I keep poured in there, and they're attracted to anything that fermenting. So the apple cider vinegar would attract them as well. And if you put a little hole in there, they can get in, but they can't get out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Sometimes you can get mushrooms in the little glass jars, that's what I like to use.
Uh-huh.
And that's another way you can trap them out. I completely forgotten about that because normally these are fungus flies and they're not gnats. And so I never thought to applying it to gnats. I was thinking about only applying it to the fungus flies. But I suppose it doesn't matter. If they're attracted to fermenting things, then they're attracted to fermenting things. So,
well, that's awesome to know. Thank you.
Did
and
you...
then can you tell me something about fruit flies? Because we mostly produce.
Right.
And I guess they're fruit flies. It, sometimes, like, they seem to come home from the grocery store, and they're just horrendously bad. Are they different from gnats, or?
They're flies. You know, gnats are flies. Fungus flies are flies. You were talking about fruit flies. They're flies. And they're all little bitty flies, and they're in different families. And they don't crossbreed either, because they're completely not unrelated as far as that is concerned. But you can also do the same thing for the fungus flies, is put out a little fermenting trap.
Okay.
And that should help take care of them, unless the infestation is really high. Now, sometimes they'll migrate from my laundry room into the kitchen, and I've always got bananas and apples laying around, because we love to eat, you know, fresh fruit. But and they're attracted to that, but they, and even if they can lay an egg on it, it's probably not going to be, they're not going to hatch and actually infest those, that fruit. And so if you wash it off before you eat it, then you're fine. Which is a good habit to do anyway.
Right. I guess I have blamed this in the past, because sometimes you go to the grocery store and you'll see, like, I don't know what they are, I assumed fruit flies, on produce, and so I just don't buy that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think I hear you saying is that they would not transport home and infest my house anyway. Is that accurate?
Yeah, not the adults. You know, if they've laid eggs on the fruit, you know, then just wash your fruit off once you get it home, and you should be fine.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate the information. This is a great show. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the call, Jean.
All right. Bye-bye.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We still have time for calls at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our insect world, the fiendish or the friendly kinds of insect, are welcome. And we have one more caller online, Robert from Ruston. You're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you tonight?
Well, good evening. I always wanted to talk to an entomologist. Question I had concerned concentrated animal feeding operations, the big beef feedlots and pork, and then chickens as well.
Right.
And they always seem to have a problem with insects
mm-hmm.
associated with the waste from the animals.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, as an entomologist, if you've ever heard of any kind of ratio. Well, first let me ask one other question. When these insects are attracted to this waste, they're attracted because they want to feed, or they simply want to lay the eggs, or both?
Normally, if it's flies, they're wanting to lay the eggs, okay? If it's beetles, then they might be feeding on some of the waste, but they're also going to be laying the eggs. And so the egg laying is probably the most important, other than feeding. You know, just your typical dung beetle that rolls up a ball of dung, it's mm-hmm. already got a little egg up inside that dung. And so a lot of people don't realize that livestock, the way you're describing them, especially things like cows and pigs, that their excrement still contains a lot of nutritional value, because it contains still a lot of carbohydrates, maybe not so much protein, but still a lot of nutritional value. And the insects can actually live on that. Yes.
All right. Do you have any kind of, you know, going with the flies?
Okay, flies.
On the solid waste, do you have any kind of ratio for how much of a weight reduction they would, for a given unit of waste, how much the larvae, the maggots, whatever you want to call them, would reduce that weight?
It would be, unless you're, on average, Robert, we're talking about minuscule amounts. You're not, being able to use insects to dispose of animal waste products is probably not going to be that feasible.
What if
it's a good idea.
Well, what if there's an economic value for the actual insects once they hatch or metamorphize or whatever the term is for insects into adult flies.
Mm-hmm. Not much economic value at all. You'd be better off raising crickets because crickets are easier to raise, they're cleaner to raise, and they actually use a lot of ground-up crickets in chicken feed. That's very, very common. But flies...
What about fish feed?
That's
what I was thinking.
Maybe not the adults, but if you could harvest the maggots in an economical way, maybe.
Yeah, I've got an economical way to harvest the adults, but not the maggots.
Yeah, that would be my... analysis of the scenario that you're setting up.
But you really don't think there's much weight reduction?
No. You know, if we could figure out, you know, that's the thing, is that's why
university?
I'm affiliated with Louisiana State University in Shreveport, sir.
In Shreveport? And what was your last name again?
I'm Beverly Burden. Beverly Burden, B-U-R-D-E-N. Yes, sir.
Okay, I can remember that. Okay. Okay, well, I've been working on an idea and never really had a chance to talk to an entomologist, and my main question was that weight reduction. But,
yeah.
All right, well, I appreciate the information. Maybe I'll give you a call.
Okay, thank you for your call.
All right, well, thank you. Now, have a good night.
You too.
You are listening to Dr. Beverly Burden and What's Bugging You, our resident entomologist here. And we have all lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We still have room for a few more calls. In the meantime, I'm going to ask Dr. Burden a couple of questions. You mentioned the pine beetle.
I know that
had devastated parts of the piney woods.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been primarily gotten under control, or is it still an out of control kind of devastating infestation?
By inspection... In large acreages, it can be somewhat under control. But if they're able to establish what I would refer to as a hot spot,
mm-hmm.
that it can then spread rapidly.
So then if somebody has found pine beetles on their property, they should probably contact the extension agents and others.
Yes.
And likely those trees are going to have to be removed, are they not?
They will be.
Yeah, they will be, because I know we had the loblolly pine problem in Florida. So, all right, we got two calls real quick. So, Bob from Nacogdoches, you're next. What's bugging you tonight?
Just wanted to say thanks to Dr. Burden for her program. My wife and I enjoy it on a regular basis as much as we can, and for the rest of the staff there at Red River Radio. And pardon me if I'm asking a question that you have addressed recently, but I've noticed a large population, or a larger than usual population, of the large black ants that I'm maybe incorrectly or am identifying as carpenter ants. They're a quarter to 3/8 of an inch long. They're real hefty fellers.
Yeah, you might be describing those, or maybe even the leafcutter ants, the Texas Attica ants. I'd actually have to get a look and see at them. But let me do some research on large ant populations in the regional. And when I come back in October, hopefully you and your spouse can be listening. And Bill, let's make sure we talk about large ants in October, because we've gotten a lot of calls about that. But let me go back and do a lot of research to find out how prevalent carpenter ants are in this area or not. I was always under the understanding that they weren't, but and that's the problem with common names. You know, what they call carpenter ants in the south may not be the same thing that they call carpenter ants in the north or the west or the east.
Sure.
And things like that. So let me say they can be, but if you're having an ant problem, are they coming into the house?
No, I just see more of them than I am accustomed to seeing. We live out in the country, and these are solid black, you know, from one end to the other. There's no color marking on them other than, you know, just a solid black color.
Right.
And I've understood that they primarily are attracted to decaying wood.
Yes.
And we live in a heavily wooded area, and trees are in various stages of their life, everything from brand new to old and decaying. So we were just, you know, wondering if there was anything that we should be wary of.
Yeah, dead and decaying logs have always been sought after by a lot of insects, especially ants,
right.
Because they're protected in there, and the wood is broken down, and it's a good place to build your house. And so that's not unusual at all. And one of the reasons you might be seeing more this year than perhaps other years are two reasons. One, insect populations will fluctuate. They'll go through like 2 years, you don't see them, and then the next year you'll see them, and 2 years you don't see them, and so forth.
Right.
But also, with the drought that we've been having, they may be out foraging more and foraging closer to civilization than they do, especially looking for water sources. And that may, and there's a lot of vegetation that are dying, and that makes the ants easier to see as well. And so, you know, there could be a lot of different factors on why their populations are higher this year or why you're seeing more this year.
Right. Well, I saw one the other day that had something I'd never seen before, one of them dragging a fairly large leaf hopper across the concrete front porch.
Wow.
I'd never seen one, carrying an insect payload.
Yeah.
But
well, leaf hoppers are small enough that they can. And so that's not surprising at all. But listen in October, and we'll get back to this topic, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Bob. But we've got to go to our next caller and try to get them in. Leon from Bossier City, you're back on with us. What's bugging you again?
Well, I wanted to get a quick review about the yellow, yellow container or yellow gizmo in order to put... Yeah.
If you're talking about the, if you're talking about the wasp, just any yellow container, and the shallower it is, the best, the better it is, because that gives you more of a surface area, so you can put the soapy water in, attract the wasp that way. Did that answer your question, Leon?
I missed the details on that previously, and thank you very much.
Good. Thank you for your call again, Leon.
Thank you, Leon, and you've been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. One final question. What can folks do right now to help prepare themselves for next year's mosquito seasons? What could they be doing around their home to make sure that mosquitoes are not, you know, nesting and breeding in their backyard for next year?
Well, with mosquitoes, It's a year-round thing, especially in this area. You want to make sure that you drain all standing water, that you make sure that all your doors and windows are closed and in good working conditions, that you take the weather strip and do that. Now, on the outside of their house, sanitation, again, with open containers, and making sure that the shrubs are trimmed very nicely and neat, and so that gives them less what we call micro ecosystems, micro habitats to have.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Burton, and we welcome you back next month for the next edition of What's Bugging
You. I'll be here.
You have been listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton, Associate Professor of Biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We'd like to thank each of you for calling tonight, and especially Dr. Burton for helping us out. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Our next show of Bird Calls will be Tuesday, October 16th. Our next What's Bugging You will be October 23rd. And this program has been produced by Bill Beckett with help from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, and Judy Cox. Thanks for listening. Radio Lab is coming up next here on Red River Radio.